Hey, Sam.
Hey, Sam, how are you?
Good. You? I'm Samantha Carey.
Hi, I'm Samantha Sima.
And we are both provisionally licensed professional counselors here in Louisiana. We are coming to you from Hammond, Louisiana. And yeah, so we're starting this podcast just to kind of open up some discussions around mental health. We're going to have people come in and talk about different topics. We'll do our own podcast with just us talking about different topics. And yeah, no. If you guys have any suggestions, we're totally open to that because we're just getting rocking and rolling here.
Mm-hmm. And today's episode, we are going to emotion regulation because we promised y'all after that anger episode that we would help talk you through how to work through the anger.
Yeah, that's the important part. We don't want to get you all mad and then be like, bye.
Bye. Good luck. Hope you figure it out because we haven't. No, I'm kidding. Well, Anyway, so yeah, starting off, I think we ended the episode kind of talking about cues. Mm-hmm. I could be making that up completely. So just in case, let's talk about the cues that our body has.
Yes.
Yeah.
So thinking about different ways that our bodies show anger or really any kind of emotion, like the kind of things that come up, physical sensations.
Yeah. Physical, emotional.
Mm-hmm.
So for me in particular, I think when anger comes up, it feels like, sometimes it feels like the world slows down for a minute, mm-hmm. genuinely, and then I can get sweaty hands, and then that can lead to more cues, which we'll talk about in a second, but those I think are the starter cues.
Yeah, I definitely notice, like, my heart racing,
mm-hmm.
that's the first thing, or like that feeling of your heart dropping into your stomach. And that's kind of my cue, whether it's fear or anger, like whatever's coming up, like that's my like, ooh, something big.
Yeah.
Like that parasympathetic nervous system.
Yeah. That response of just like immediate hormones and chemicals running through your body rampant.
Yes. My sympathetic, not parasympathetic's what brings you down.
Got it.
That mixed that up. That's my bad. But yeah. No, the alarm bells, you know, the alarm bells going off and that. Like, I notice when I feel really afraid, mm-hmm. I can, like, my fists want to clench. Not like a, I want to beat somebody up, but, like, I want to run. That feeling of, like, I need to clench my fists and take off. My arms feel, like, weird. That's my experience of, like, get out of here now.
Yeah. So that flight response. And for some people, that fist clenching is a fight response. And even some, that's a freeze response I can see of just, like, almost like a protection. Like, mm-hmm. if we, like, need to clench our fists because we're frozen, right? And maybe protect our body. So I've seen, even like with myself, like you'll feel like your shoulders tensing, or I've seen clients where they're like hunched over in the chair and they're protecting their body almost in a primal instinct of like protecting the most important organs, right?
Yeah.
And thinking about how we respond to anger, to fear, to anxiety in such a primal way, it's almost in comparison of like we're facing a lion, right? But really we're facing a very human experience that we, that our brain can't decipher whether or not we're in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And so the point of grounding and knowing your cues is to be able to regulate your body and your brain and telling your brain like everything's okay, like I'm not in this danger, life or death thing, right?
Yes. There's a really good book that we should put a link to called Burnout by the Nagoski sisters. I think that's Emily and Yeah,
we're. I know you're looking at me for confirmation.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know the book, but I there.
That's okay.
Ask me one author.
They're sisters, so we will put a link to it. But mm-hmm. the burnout book talks about completing the stress cycle mm-hmm. and how like there's different ways to do that, but you have to tell your body like. If your body was in the, oh, we're running from a lion phase, you mm-hmm. have to do certain things to tell it that we are not running from a lion.
Correct.
Anymore. And so being able to recognize the cues, because if you don't ever complete the stress cycle, that builds up over years and years and years of like just staying in fight, flight, or freeze. Mm-hmm. And they talk a lot about that and how we get burnt out because you stay in this state for so long.
Oh, and the life that takes from us over time too, right? Mm-hmm. Because we're putting so much stress on our heart, on our body, on our brains. And the point too is when we react to a certain situation, we only exacerbate that reaction. So in the future, a similar situation comes up and we get the same feeling and reaction and we don't understand why do I feel this way. It's because when we did something to almost confirm to our amygdala that we were actually in danger, aka we fought. We froze, we flew away into the nighttime sky. And when we're responding in those ways, we're confirming, yes, that was dangerous. Thank you so much, amygdala, for having my back. And but instead, what we're looking to do is come back into reality, into our bodies, and be able to say, like, no, this isn't danger. And our amygdala is going to be saying, I think we're in danger.
Excuse me.
I'm blocking all your serotonin and sending all the adrenaline and cortisol throughout your body until you do something about it. And so it really does matter how we respond.
Yeah, and also with the caveat, like as we're talking about this, it matters how you respond, but you are fighting a natural instinct that's happening in your body. So yes. It is something that like, we talked about mindfulness a little bit in the last episode. Mm-hmm. It is something you have to be so conscious and mindful of. Yes. It doesn't just happen. Mm-hmm. So when people tell me, clients say all the time, oh, well, I'm working on this. And I'm like, what does that mean?
Right.
Because if you're just trying to, like, think your way out of it, like, we can think our ways around certain things. We can think our ways, like, cognitive behavioral therapy type things. We can think our way out of certain situations and behaviors, but like when it comes to our primal, like you said, right. Fight, flight, freeze, you can't just think your way out of that
because our brain is not in a thinking mind.
Yeah, so like I think that's a really good point just for people.
Let's lay out the brain.
I was gonna say, so like this podcast is kind of aimed I think at clinicians, but clients can get so much out of this as well. So I try to explain mm-hmm. like things like this that maybe clinicians would know that clients wouldn't. But mm-hmm. there's three parts to your brain, right? So there's your reptile brain. And that's the part that like my pet lizard has.
Which, adorable, might I add. I met her today.
I have a leopard gecko and her name is Bean and she has a reptile brain. And so she eats food and she breathes uh-huh. and she drinks and she sheds and she has her little natural instincts, right? Mm-hmm. If I pick her up in a way that like a pincer grasp, like my two fingers going around her side, she thinks I am an animal trying to eat her. Mm-hmm. And so she bites, which is really scary for everybody involved. Her little teeth are not sharp and she's fine. But like if I scoop her up, she knows that is not in her instinct as a threatening yeah. thing, right? Like she's jumping on rocks and things, mm-hmm. so it's just like, okay, this weird moving rock is picking me up. She's chill. But, so then we have, I think, about your mammalian brain. That's on top of that, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, my dogs. Very needy, very emotional, pack animals, right? Like, the mm-hmm. social connection's mm-hmm. important, the playfulness, like, they have mm-hmm. personalities, but, like, all they really understand is the reptile instincts of I have to live mm-hmm. and then the pleasure seeking part, right? That's like when we talk about
belly rubs and
pet and meds, treats. Oh
yes.
Oh. So and I mean like when we talk about addiction, people's frontal lobe shuts off and they're living in their mammalian brain, which is the pleasure center, right? Right. And then you have your frontal lobe, your prefrontal cortex, like the part that makes us human. Yes. And so that is where we think, that's mm-hmm. where we reason, that's where we have all these ideas and logic. Yeah, so when we think about all that, like, you're having to kind of hack your brain because your fight, flight, freeze is in the reptile brain. Like, Bean knows if a big claw hand is trying to grab her, mm-hmm. she gonna fight. Mm-hmm. I mean, she tries to run, but if I get her with my claw hand, then she bites.
Right. And that's also the thing where, you know, our fight, flight, freeze goes into a certain order, right? And so, yeah, so we're looking to our reptile primal brain when we get into fight, flight, freeze. Mm-hmm. Our amygdala is the size of an almond, mm-hmm. fun fact, and she does the most, mm-hmm. which I love her. We appreciate her. She protects us.
Keeps us alive.
Keeps us alive, keeps us safe. Also, kind of, you know, like, does the most sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. When she goes off when a car's about to run us over and we jump out of the way, love that.
Love her.
When we get a text that's like, hey, can we talk later? And then your body goes into, like, panic mode and tries to kill you. That
is a sit-down conversation we need to have with her.
Yes.
Correct. So, telling yourself, truly being able to have conversations with yourself, even though, you know, people do have this stigma against mental health. We've talked about this on the podcast, and I'm sure anyone listening is aware of the stigma that's out there. But talking with yourself is not, like, crazy. It's not, you know, weird. It is so natural and something that we need to do, because when we are in our reptile brain, that prefrontal cortex, she's lights off, girl. She mm-hmm. is, she's night-night. We can't logically be thinking in that moment. So it takes that grounding in order to get us back there, right? But knowing the right times of when to ground is also important. And sometimes, like, when it comes to panic attacks that might come, sometimes it's about riding it out in a healthy way, in a way that you're safe, and then working on that outside of your panic attacks. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, because Sam and I kind of talked about this a little bit before we started, but mm-hmm. it's really important that we can be okay in the discomfort, because I think we're going to do a whole episode on, like, avoidance and avoidance of discomfort, but I think that one of the big issues we have is, like, when we get uncomfortable, we think that we have to stop feeling uncomfortable immediately or something's wrong with us.
Yeah, so if anyone looked on the Instagram story, this is going to be, like, 2 weeks ahead of time, but I just did that anxiety training, mm-hmm. and what they said was, just because you're feeling uncomfortable does not mean you're in danger. Right? I know. When she said that, I was like, writing this down.
Tell my amygdala that.
Right. And so, but that's what you want to tell her, is that, like, okay, I'm feeling discomfort right now, right? Mm-hmm. That does not mean I'm in danger. Mm-hmm. And so, something she talked about with panic attacks, which is something I actually found myself naturally doing during a panic attack when I, first off, your first panic attack, you don't know it's a panic attack.
You think you're dying.
You think you're dying because you never had it. All of a sudden, your heart is feeling like you're going into cardiac arrest, mm-hmm. right? Or having a stroke, literally. And I say this very genuinely.
And you say that your first panic attack, but I'm going to tell you.
Your first.
Well. You. And it, when they change, right? So, like, I remember the time that, like, my dog ate car lubricant and I dropped him off at the vet. And they're like, well, he might die. We'll let you know in an hour if you have to take him somewhere else. And
why would they say that like that? Why would they?
I don't know. But okay. I drove away from there and I was so hysterical mm-hmm. that my face went numb and my hands went numb. And I was like, I called my husband and I said, I have to go to the emergency room right now. I think I'm having a stroke.
Yeah.
And then I Googled it and Google's like, no, sometimes your extremities and your face go numb because like your body's rerouting blood flow and trying whatever. And those aren't as necessary. Anyway, I was like, oh, cool. Not dying. Mm-hmm. I did not die. Did not have a stroke. Just mm-hmm. I'm here.
Yeah. That was actually one of my first panic attacks experiences where, my resting heart rate, according to my watch, was like 140 something. Mm-hmm. And so, just so you know, that can also be a panic attack, okay? But when I didn't know that, I called the doctor. I ended up with a nurse who I told, you know, this is my resting heart rate. And she said, you need to go to the ER right now. which then just sent me full blown, like, oh my gosh, my whole body felt like I went almost like blacked out because I was so dizzy. Mm-hmm. Had someone drive me to the ER, literally went through the whole thing, and it ended up being a panic attack. That is the realest thing. If you've never experienced a panic attack, I hope you don't have to. It is awful. It's so uncomfortable. But once you become aware that, like, I experience panic attacks, and you become aware of what works for you, of how to get through them, yeah, that's when you'll be able to work through them more quickly, more efficiently. They're uncomfy always, but truly it does help knowing that.
I do want to add, like, a huge asterisk and caveat of, if you're feeling this, don't just assume it's a panic attack. Go to the emergency room, because they're going to be, like, you will not be the first or the last person to go to the emergency room for it. And, like, I know we have to be mindful about, like, medical bills and stuff. We are not doctors, so that's why I'm saying, like, if your feet, like, if your heart rate is 140 and you feel like you can't breathe or your body's going numb.
Yeah.
Go talk to your doctor, go to the emergency room, like, don't ignore those things.
Especially if you have no history of panic attacks, right? Like, if this is your first panic attack, obviously considering, like, health insurance, and we understand that that's not, I mean, when I got stuck with that bill, I almost cried. And then I was, like, so mad at my panic attack because, like, wow, you really had to go all out. But, you know, one thing in the anxiety training, too, she talked about, and this is actually what I was saying naturally came to me during a panic attack, was, you know, for a minute, I was like, oh, here it goes, I'm dying. Ah, this is the end. And then I said to myself, you know what? Hold on, this might be a panic attack. And then I said, I'm going to ride this out like a panic attack. And if I still feel the symptoms, then I'm going to take care of it.
Yes.
And then it really went away. And, like, and so she brought that up during the anxiety training of, like, always treat panic attacks like a panic attack first. Like,
give myself a minute.
Give yourself a minute. And and say, this is a panic attack. And, you know, even though that amygdala, she's going to be like, this isn't a panic attack.
You're dying.
You're dying. Tell her to shush for a minute, just a minute, and see where you are then. Panic attacks can last a little bit of time too, but you'll feel the symptoms going down. It's that icky, exhausting body feeling that will really last the longest, of, like, my chest feels like an elephant just, like, got up. It's sore.
I call it, like, a panic hangover.
Yes.
For, like, the rest of the day.
Yes.
Hours of feeling, like, hungover.
Yes.
It's like a crash.
Well, and so if, you know, if no one knows, someone who's listening that doesn't know what a panic attack actually is and why they happen, right? It's something naturally occurring in our body that amygdala girly thinks is us dying. So, you know, our heart picks up in beat, our blood pressure goes up, some blood just moves quicker than normal, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just something naturally occurring in our body, and we don't even understand. That's why when we say, I don't even know why I had a panic attack, it's because this is so underlying, like, what's happening inside of you. You don't know that these things are occurring, but your amygdala does. And she said, oh man, that felt different. That didn't feel safe. I don't feel safe. And now we're all going to feel unsafe for a minute.
Well, yeah. And when you think about the idea of, like, your body thinks you're dying, right? So your heart's going to pump more blood to try to get, like, if you're injured, it's going to pump more blood to try to get you, like, healing faster and, like, taken care of, right? Sometimes some people throw up when they have panic attacks, like digestion, not necessary. Get that out. Goodbye.
Yeah. It could have been the food we ate. Gone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, like, it... body going into it. So with that, what do we do? How do we ground? I'm looking and thinking about how we want to move into talking about, like, grounding and relaxation.
Yeah.
And kind of, like, not just with panic or anger, but just in general, like, what's kind of the difference between the two?
Right. So we want to treat grounding like a tool that we use every day. And getting used to using it, right? So if we're someone with anxiety, and anxiety can present as anger, by the way, and I'm sure we talked about that on the last episode.
I don't know if we did. Well, fun fact.
Anxiety can look very much like irritability, anger, all the fun stuff, right? So we might be the person that says, I'm not anxious, I'm just angry. Let me tell you something.
At me.
I hate to break it to you. So being able to calm ourselves throughout the day and regulate ourselves throughout the day prevents those spikes of anger, spikes of anxiety, spikes of panic. And we want to avoid responding directly to the panic with a grounding, especially for certain people with certain disorders, because then that can become almost a compulsion, almost a need, right? So, for example, I had a really long day, a hard day at work. People, you know, coworkers got me so messed up, right? I'm going to have a drink. That's how we would be treating grounding techniques with our panic attacks, right? Mm-hmm. So we want to use them throughout the day. I'm not saying we're using alcohol throughout the day, but like, what I mean? So like, we have a drink every now and then with a friend, or we're just like, you know, just to chill, whatever, right? Versus I'm doing it because of this.
Right, when your brain's associating that with I will feel better if this happens, and correct, if this does not happen, I will not feel better.
Correct.
Right.
So, yeah, so when you're practicing these grounding and relaxation techniques, take into account that you want to try incorporating it into your everyday, like even doing it like in the morning and your afternoon lunch break and then at night before bed. Like, getting used to doing it every day, that way you're staying regulated throughout the day and it's not in direct response. For panic attacks, this is about talking yourself off the cliff, girl. Like, you're talking yourself off the cliff, you're uncomfy, and then we're just going to come down and, like, ride that uncomfy feeling that is jolting our body. And then just, again, start incorporating those groundings.
And I kind of want to talk about, like, relaxation. Okay. Too. So, like, relaxation is more of a grounding, is kind of like getting into the present moment, getting into your body, connecting, leaning in, and then relaxation is more of like to calm us. Yeah. So, like, when I think about relaxing at the end of a long day versus grounding, like, if I am like activated, dysregulated, my like nervous system is not at like a level place. I want to ground.
Right.
Like, I want to be connected in this moment, feeling my body, being mindful, that kind of grounding. And then when I'm like, when my body aches or like I'm tired, when I think about relaxing, I think about like my bedtime routine. So like, I will take a bath every night before bed, like a nice hot bath. And like, that's part of my, like, my body knows, okay, we're going to relax all these muscles. Mm-hmm. Or if you think about like progressive muscle relaxation and relaxation techniques, you can use grounding and relaxation techniques can be similar. Mm-hmm. And some can be both, but the main difference is relaxation is really more of like a calming, getting zen, and grounding is more like connecting in the present, being mindful, being aware, and in your body.
Yeah, reconnecting to your body, mind, and body. Yeah, and so this can look different for everybody. This is very individualized of what's going to work for you in regards to grounding and relaxation. So relaxation, for Sam being taking that hot bath and like washing the day away, yes, right? And then for other people, it might be going on a walk, or honestly, I feel really relaxed when I get to like bake some cookies, or like, because that's like my fun time. It's also incorporating self-care. But with grounding, that too will look different for people about how to reconnect. So just know there's a trillion and one different grounding techniques and different relaxation techniques. And they might look different for neurospicy people.
Yes.
Okay? So if we have ADHD, or if we have autism spectrum disorder, or if we have OCD, any of those neurospicy fun things, then we want to look up different grounding and relaxation that might be, what's the word, linked better and working more helpful.
Yeah, more, now that you're asking for the word.
You know the word.
More effective.
Yes.
Yeah, more effective for people who are neurodivergent. And with that, like, there are resources. Like, I think about the neurodivergent DBT workbook.
Uh-huh.
So it's like specific, it's really tiny and it's specifically designed
mindfulness
DBT for, and yeah. mindfulness skills for people who are neurodivergent. And I know personally, like, my sweet, sweet therapist tried to get me to do breathing exercises for the longest. I'm like, no, absolutely not. No, thank you, sir. And if you're listening, he knows that we did finally start. I do breathing more because I started having panic attacks. Mm-hmm. And so what was really helpful for me is, like, and even now that I don't really experience panic attacks often, I love a good, like, psychological sigh.
Mm.
That's my fave. Mm-hmm. Because it's not, I think it's very neurodivergent friendly because it's not this, like, oh, you need to calm down, you need to take 20 minutes and
empty
you need to
meditate. Your mind.
This thing will never be
empty. Empty. Yeah.
It will never be empty. But
so please, if you find a way, you let a girl know, right?
So for me, a psychological sigh, it's important to, and I also hate it because I like being all nice and crunched up and like crossing my legs.
But that's
and stuff.
The whole point.
So I like, you got to make sure your feet are on the ground and you're like in a comfortable seated position. So like a neutral, chilling out. And like, I do it in sessions. Like when I would mm-hmm. run groups, if groups, like the one time there was almost like a fight in my group and I'm like, whoa. I was doing my psychological sigh, and the guys are going at it. I'm like, okay, guys, I hear you. But so the way that a psychological sigh works is, so you're going to take a deep breath in. You're going to fill your whole belly, all your lungs. You're going to fill up as much as you can. And once you get to the top of that breath, you're going to take in a tiny little breath more. So we're also doing this on video, so yeah. We'll be able to post a little bit. So we're going to breathe in through our nose. Once you get to the top, and breathe out. And you can do that. It's not something that you have to do like 5 or 10 times. Like, I don't know about you, but like, just that pressure in my chest makes me feel like I'll do 2 or 3 and then I'm feeling good. It's not something where it's like, okay, I need you to take 20 deep breaths
yeah.
and breathe in really slow. And you want to breathe out longer than you breathe in for that as well. But you can also hold your breath, and just having that pressure in there, pressing on that vagus nerve, and then that longer exhale.
Yeah. So, and I'm glad you said that about the exhale too, because our exhales is what slows down our heart rate.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're taking, you know, let's say we are doing what is that called? The sigh?
Psychological sigh.
The psychological sigh is helpful to hit that vagus nerve. And when we're doing just outside breathing, throughout the day, if we're just trying to focus on our breath work, not specifically in response to something right of like, oh, I'm feeling some anxiety, come on, okay? Making sure we're taking long, intentional exhales, and you will notice your heart rate goes down. Your inhales aren't going to be nearly as long. It's going to be maybe like even half the time of your exhale.
Mm-hmm.
And just keep repeating that, and your heart rate will go down. I actually tested this the other day.
Yeah, it's fun. If you like, you can feel it, or
yeah.
if you have a smartwatch, you can watch it.
You can watch it happen in real time. So I had my looked at my watch the other day, and it was at like 85. So I started doing those slow, long exhales, and it went down to 64.
I run a little hot. Because when you said 85, I'm like, oh, that's good.
But,
so like, my resting heart rate on the reg is like in the 80s.
Well, I think mine's probably like 70s. So like that got you, but you know, so okay, let's say Sam's at like 104.
Yeah.
Okay. And then
that's
she gets it down to 80. And then we start looking outside of our medical, look at the medical things as well, right?
Yeah. They said I'm not dying. It's okay.
Okay. Exactly. And so when we figure out where we're supposed to be, or like what's healthy, what's in our, you know, range.
Our own normal range. Because
yes.
below 100 is normal, considered normal.
Yeah.
But when you're up a little higher, they do want to run, they might want to run tests on you.
Yeah.
So check with your cardiologist,
yes.
please.
And also when you tend to look for those symptoms, just know that can initially
increase
spike it. Yeah. Because let's say I look at my watch and I see 110 and I'm just sitting chilling. that for a minute. I'm going to be like, what the heck?
Yes.
And then then it's going to go to 125 and I'm going to be like, oh no, oh my God. And that's just, it just keeps going. So just give yourself a second to go, okay, I'm going to do those long exhale breaths that I learned from the Good You Therapy podcast, or honestly, literally anywhere else. But it'd be great if you learned from here. And try it out and watch it go down and make it a challenge. Let's see how low I can get it. You know, even like make it a game for yourself. So making sure you're using grounding throughout the day and incorporating relaxation, whether it's through your self-care, like crocheting or watching a good movie and just...
Yeah, connecting with your people too.
Yes.
So like, this is something I have discovered as an adult, but...
And it takes that.
Yeah. So I know people who have had kids or done research, or if your TikTok algorithm has just been like babies, skin to skin contact with newborns is a really big thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like it helps with their temperature regulation. It just helps like
their connection with mom. Mm-hmm.
There's so many benefits for mom and baby and all the oxytocin. Like there's lots of science as to why skin to skin is important, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like as adults, we don't think about that, but being able to like lay with someone that you feel comfortable and safe with and having that, like I'm thinking about my husband in particular, because one day he was like, just come like lay by me, and I'm like, oh wow, like just being able to have like our skin touching and like being able to like breathe together, that co-regulation.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, like when I'm feeling overwhelmed, I'll literally just be like, come here, arm back, and he'll come and he'll just hug me and we will literally just stop and like sink our breaths.
Yeah.
And that, if we're in the middle of like a little argument or something, like that's what we do to kind of like ground and bring ourselves together, because it works so well. Like co-regulation, I forget the exact number, but like co-regulation is like multiple times more effective than individual regulation.
I bet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and because you also have that support factor to it, it takes away the isolation from your body feeling that way. It almost... as a secondary confirmation to your amygdala that, like, no, we are safe.
Mm-hmm. But we have the mirror neurons in our brains.
Right.
Yeah, that's a big piece.
And, you know, also taking into account people who might feel uncomfortable with touch.
Mm-hmm. Right? It doesn't have to be physical touch either.
It doesn't. It can be literally just, like, knowing someone's by your side in this. Mm-hmm. It could be words of affirmation through it where they're just like, you know, I'm here for you if you need anything.
Mm-hmm.
But
it could be a FaceTime with your best friend who's out of state.
Yes.
Like being able to look at someone that you care about.
Mm-hmm.
While
you regulate.
It releases like feel good chemicals in your
endorphins
brain.
And serotonin, dopamine, all those good things.
And being able to do that, like I said, if you're getting someone to breathe with you, just the mirror neuron experience of, like, even if you're not touching that person, watching them breathe with you and, like, being able to do, like, the deep breathing, doing something like that, that co-regulation that happens is really, really integral. And that doesn't have to be a romantic partner. That can be a friend. That can be...
a family member.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. We have...
your dog.
I think about, like, I think about Dr. Williams' hugs, like... one of our professors, when she would see
they're
a student,
so intentional.
A minute, oh, such a good hug. And that co-regulation, like, you instantly feel, like, safer and lighter.
Yeah.
If you're into hugs and you trust that person.
Yes, yes. And yeah, if you know someone that gives, like, a really good intentional hug and just knows that, just, that's why we talk about how important support systems are, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of, like, when we're working with clients, we want to make sure, like, you know, who do you go to when you're having problems outside, you know, like what's going on? Like, I need to talk to somebody. Who are you going to? How do they respond to you? You know, and because sometimes we then find out that our clients are going to people that are telling them really not great things to help them. And like their intentions are there, but right.
And sometimes you find out that you are the only person that your client has that is calm and that is kind and that is like regulating for them.
Right.
And you might be that first experience that they have with that.
So let's say that's 168 hours out of the week, right? 168 hours in the week?
I don't know. So math? Are you asking me to do math right now, Samantha?
Okay. I'm going to go with that. So 1 hour a week, they feel... like they're in a place where they can feel safe enough, right? Are you looking?
Yeah,
it is 168. Yay! I'm sorry. But so that's something that I also, the Adlerian in me wanting to encourage my clients, right? I had a client that I worked with who kept saying like, oh, it's because of you. Like it's, and I'm like, but it's not. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, but it is. And I'm like, but there's 168 hours out of the week and you're here for one and you're doing the work 167 hours a week.
Right.
Like, so who, so is it me?
And or, even in that hour,
like. Even in an hour, you are choosing to be here. You are choosing to do the work and yeah. to transfer it out of here.
I think we practice very similarly. And in that, like, I tell clients all the time, we're a team.
Yes.
Like, I am not.
Ahead.
Anytime I have somebody behind. That's never been to therapy, I'm like, listen, I'm not going to be like this professor that sits and takes notes and tells you what to do. Like, that's not. Mm-hmm. We are a team. We're collaborating. Mm-hmm. I'm like that weird guy with the red tape that's like, look, these are these patterns that I'm seeing.
Yes.
But that's what I'm doing is saying, this looks like a pattern. What do you think?
I'm your inner thoughts.
Yeah. My therapist really is my inner voice. Sometimes I'm like, I hear you sometimes when I'm
no, literally.
Thinking about stuff.
And, yeah, I kind of describe it as like we're walking side by side
yes.
through this journey together. Like I'm not one step ahead or one step behind. Like we are side by side through this. There might be times where we hold each other's hands, not literally, but like to guide over, you know, a mud puddle that we come across and things like that. But this is genuinely a collaborative process that you go in and enter in, and you might not. Find that, like, you might find a counselor that doesn't work that way.
Right.
So that's just Sam and Sam.
Yeah. And we definitely, and
Sam, of course others.
Sam said Adlerian earlier, and so for people who don't know what that is, there's different theories mm-hmm. that people practice from. Like, your counselor might be, like, eclectic, Dr. Lehman's favorite word.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, there's different types of theories. And Adlerian is the theory that we've kind of, like, gravitated towards. And it's this idea that, like, all behavior is purposeful.
Yeah.
People, a lot of problems arise when people feel discouraged. Mm-hmm. Like, those types of things. So when we talk about Adlerian, like, that's what we're talking about is the base that we kind of look through, the lens we look through when we're working with clients. And honestly, just, like, existing in the world.
In the world. And, like, this need for sense of a belonging, right?
Yes.
Like, the big sense of belonging and then being able to provide that encouragement. So, like, you know, it's so important that we provide that encouragement to ourselves as well.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing how much work that we do and just, you know, note how proud of ourselves we are. And, like, that is not big-headed. That is not egotistical. That is really just sitting with yourself and looking at the work you do. And guess what? There's going to be slip-ups.
Oh, yeah.
Always in any area of life, and that's okay. Giving ourselves grace, giving ourselves that moment to redirect and hop back on. And just know that so many people carry shame over that, and it's so unnecessary. Shame is another form of, like, mental self-harm, truly.
Really.
So, and we'll talk a little bit about that. What did I just say?
About shame. Being
no,
self-harm.
Before that.
Oh, God.
No, hang on. Oh, about, you know, plummets and in your mental health journey and, like, needing to restart and things like that. Or, you know, just hop back on. But,
yeah. So, that's all of that to say, like, use your support system. Like, that mm-hmm. is part of regulating emotions, is whether that's co-regulation with people that you trust, whether that's physical touch, whether that's just, like, breathing, whether that's just the presence of another calm person that you mm-hmm. trust. And it can be literally anybody that is safe and trusting and that has space for you. And, yeah.
So, you know, we did a one of the grounding techniques of the psychological psi.
Mm-hmm.
There's one more that I love, and maybe we can use this as our ender today. It's the 5-4-3-2-1 grounding technique.
Ah.
And if you have a candy on you, or maybe your coffee next to you, something that you can taste, that we'll save that for the end. But if not, then use your spit. Okay. So all as always, feet planted flat on the ground. Make sure we have it open and welcoming body language. Remember, if we are crossing our arms in front of us, we are in fight or flight and we're protecting ourselves from someone hurting our organs, and we don't need to do that right now. So open body language. So Sam, would you mind being the person I walk through this?
Sure, okay. I'm ready.
Okay, so I'm going to have you name five things that you see around you and, you know, give a little description to each.
Okay. So I see an orange butterfly mm-hmm. on our blanket that we're using for sound. I see a blue dream catcher. Mm-hmm. Do I need to describe that?
Blue dream catcher is good. Okay,
cool. I see white flowers. Mm-hmm. That's three things? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I see a white globe. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. And one more thing. Mm-hmm. I see a purple suitcase.
All right. So that's five things there that you see. So four things that you can feel. So you can either feel something physical, sensations, or naming an emotional thing that you're feeling.
Okay. So I feel the softness of my fuzzy slippers. Mm-hmm. I feel the, like, squeeze of my sweatshirt cuffs. Mm-hmm. I can feel my hair itching on the back of my neck. What's that, three? Mm-hmm. Maybe four? Mm-hmm. I can feel the air in my lungs.
Okay. Okay, so that's four things you can feel. Now, three things you can hear.
I can hear, I bet nobody else can hear it, but I can hear my dog squeaking. He's got like a little squeaky wheel whine in the other room. I can feel...
Here.
I can hear my legs like moving on the leather seat mm-hmm. on the chair that I'm in, and I can hear your voice. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And let's see, two things you can smell. Now, this is the point where I tell my clients or anyone I'm walking through this, you know, if you want to take the time to smell if we need to reapply some deodorant.
But I think I did spray my perfume this morning, okay, so that so smells good. That. I'm going to be honest, I have a terrible sense of smell.
Maybe our hair.
Oh, yep, coconut dry shampoo.
Okay. So, and then this is the part where that last one thing that we can taste. We have our
a little bit of body armor
in it, or just drink near us.
Strawberry banana body armor.
And how are you feeling after that grounding?
It makes me want to laugh because I just feel like I wasn't paying attention to where we were at all. Mm-hmm. And so now I feel definitely more just aware of mm-hmm. what's going on, right? Like, mm-hmm. I didn't feel super anxious before anything bad, but I definitely feel more like, oh, like I am in my room right now. Like,
yeah. And laughing is so amazingly grounding as well, right? Like, you know, make it silly. Make the grounding silly mm-hmm. with, you know, doing it with someone you love too, right? With
that's co-regulate.
Yeah.
That's what I forgot earlier. Laughing is a huge piece of co-regulation
yes.
too. Yeah, those mirror neurons.
Mm-hmm. So like even if y'all are grounding together and having one walk you through this 5-4-3-2-1, mm-hmm. Which again, that's literally what it's called. Just look up 5-4-3-2-1 grounding technique if we forget what order it goes in. And I hope y'all did it with us, by the way.
Yeah.
If not, reverse it and do it again. And yeah, and always check in with your client or who you do the grounding with and just see, like, check in with yourself. How am I feeling now that I just grounded? How are you feeling after this grounding, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, today we kind of talked about, like, emotional regulation.
Yeah.
We talked about different body cues that come up as we're, like, experiencing different emotions. And then we kind of talked about co-regulation, the importance of using others, using our skills, psychological side, different ways that we can kind of reconnect, the difference between grounding and relaxation. Mm-hmm. And so all of that kind of wraps up our emotional regulation talk. And then as we get ready to move forward, we're going to have lots of different topics coming up. We want to talk a little bit about codependency. Mm-hmm. We're planning to do a series on grief,
like yes,
multi-episode series. And what other kind of things are we coming up with in the next few episodes?
So we did talk about that we're gonna look into avoidance, doing mm-hmm. avoidance. Look into avoidance and money. And then, you know, when to reach out for mental health help, when to look for a professional in your area. And then sometimes it can be really discouraging when mm-hmm. you reach out and you don't hear back. So we'll talk about that as well.
Yes.
How to have difficult conversations without hurting the other person.
Ooh, love that. Right? Because those are hard to do.
Those are hard
to do. It's an art.
It's practice, right? Yeah. And we're also wanting some feedback. A friend of mine suggested that we do a once a month bonus episode where we do a guided meditation that's very ASMR-like, mm-hmm. and you could use it before bed or just as your relaxation grounding. And yeah, just let us know if you like that. We're probably going to do it anyway, though.
Yeah.
So
also, share, like, invite people to follow, do all the good things, find us on Instagram, and reach out if you guys have any feedback, because we're in the process of building this podcast. We're going to learn. We're going to grow. You'll see our weird little setup on our Insta story of how we're trying to, like, work on our audio and stuff. So this is a growing process, mm-hmm. and any feedback at all, whether it's good or bad, please reach out to us, because we are, like, wanting to make this as positive of an experience as possible.
Yes. So. And please share with friends, family. Just because you share with them doesn't mean that you're sharing with them for any underlying reason. Maybe there is, and you're like, I want them to hear this anger episode. But also, you know, just sharing so that we can also expand that listeners and, like, so that we can spread more information and hopefully help other people. But, yeah, goodyou.therapy on Instagram and goodyou.therapy@gmail.com.
Thanks.
Bye.
Disclaimer. Sam and Sam are provisional licensed professional counselors. This podcast may include opinions, experiences, and research-backed discussions. This podcast is not meant to diagnose or provide any mental health treatment. The purpose of this podcast is to encourage thoughtful discussions around mental health. If you are seeking mental health services, please reach out to a licensed professional in your state or country that can give you additional resources. Thank you for listening.